Bob is certainly a tough act to follow. Well, good afternoon. On behalf of a large team that Bob just mentioned at the University of Georgia, I'd like to present some additional information on what Bob has already started. We're engineers, soil scientists, nematologists, plant pathologists, all working on this project for several years, and I'm going to give you some information that we have as of this season. Well, I don't have to go into this. We've already heard all the problems that nematodes cause. All of you are certainly aware of that. Dr. Overstreet and others have done a jam-up job in the past of showing the relationships and correlations between these sandy patches and these high counts of nematodes, the yield losses. But in the southern coastal plain, I think Bob alluded to, we've got very sandy soils. We don't have that abrupt difference in soil texture that you might see in Louisiana or other places. So we're going from sand to really sandy to incredibly sandy in the fields instead of having some of these clay areas. Well, in 2005, we started this study to look at how variable in the spatial sense and temporal sense is this root knot problem. What surrogate data could we use? Could we follow what others have done before, looking at EC primarily, to correlate with this nematode occurrence? And could we develop these risk areas, or what we're calling risk management zones, to better help the grower better manage of the situation in the field? And what do we mean by risk management zones? Well, Bob did a good job covering that. But I think the first bullet is what Bob really hammered home, and that's direct-to-farmer sampling. We're not touting that we can replace that, but we can better direct where to do the sampling rather than just taking samples randomly across the field. The whole session is related to variable application of nematicides, so we certainly think this work would lend itself to helping in that regard. We certainly feel that it would be site-specific application rather than variable rate. We hope that we would reduce yield losses, reduce risk for over and under applying nematicides if those are chosen, and in the basic sense to improve the bottom line of the grower. So in creating these zones, we want to create a homogeneous zone that uses, in our case, EC data from a Veris sensor, elevation data from, in our case, a Trimble RTK GPS system, and from that we would calculate slope. And we also work with some QuickBird satellite imagery to calculate NDVI from bare soil images of the fields. If you followed any of the work that Brenda Ortiz and Dana Sullivan have reported in past BeltWise and in many other conferences, they've used 05 and 0 through 07 data to do a lot of heavy-duty statistical analysis, geostatistical analysis. They've done canonical analysis. They've done semivariograms, cross-parallelograms, and even though I know what they did, it's very hard to explain in a short amount of time. Let's just say you should go back to their reports to see all that they did. But they found that, yes, root knot populations, southern root knot populations are aggregated. There is a strong correlation with deep EC readings from the Veris. We also see that elevation, slope, and NDVI also have spatial correlation. So you're welcome to go back and read her thorough analysis of all that they did to combine these variables to delineate these risk management zones. We use that management zone analyst software I think someone mentioned earlier that USDA has developed. Did some fuzzy clustering, used their performance values to evaluate the number of zones that was developed by that software, and then did more statistics to validate that those zones were performing the way we wanted them to, at least on paper. So we felt like the process of developing risk management zones from our perspective was a success. We felt that, or that we didn't feel, we noticed that within zone variability was less than the whole field. That's what you want to do if you develop these zones. We decided to drop NDVI. It didn't really add a lot more to the mix than just having EC readings. They're both closely related. and it's much more difficult and expensive to get that data. So we dropped NDVI out of the mix and just went with EC and elevation data, which is much easier to obtain. So we wanted to evaluate these zones that we came up with and look at two nematicides applied at two different rates, look at its effect on population and lint yield, and compare these across risk management zones. We would randomly allocate in a randomized complete block design across the entire length of fields, set up some experimental sampling plots randomly in these zones to collect data such as population and yield, plant height, and tons of other data. Give you an idea of where we're at. We're in deep south Georgia, south central, and southwest Georgia. Here's the field sites near Tifton, Moultrie, Camilla, if you're familiar with that area. These are the fields that we used in 2007. You can see from the reflectance, just the aerial imagery, very sandy. These are the management zones. You've seen the one on the left from Bob's presentation. The blue blocks are the sampling zones, sampling plots, excuse me, that we established in the fields. The two fields we used in 08 and 09, and they're zones that primarily came from EC and elevation. You see the sampling plots there. So we did put these, if you want to call them verification strips or test strips, across the entire length of the field. They were in four rows by four treatments by 100-foot sampling plots. We applied TIMIC at planting in 3 pounds and 6 pound rates using farmer equipment, calibrated farmer equipment. We used our rig to apply the Telon pre-plant at 3 gallon rate plus 3 pound of TIMIC, or 6 gallon rate plus 3 pound of TIMIC. So that was our four treatments that were put into the fields. We collected root knot counts, 75, 110, 175 approximate days after planting, collected yield at harvest using our cotton picker with an ag leader cotton yield monitor on it, and then lots of other data was collected along the way, including plant height, root galling, soil plant nutrients, etc. Some results from field one in 07, nice response. I threw a quick line across the 100 threshold there. You see the effect. Did have some from the moderate risk zone to the high risk zone. And this was the field that Bob showed in his presentation. You see a nice progressional effect here from the nematicides and the zones. We did have some better control from Telon than we did with TIMIC in the high risk zone. Go back there, you can see that. We had some effects, some significant effects that we were hoping to see. Low risk zones, the much smaller particle size, any of the treatments provided sufficient control. So let's move on to 08. Different fields, much sandier fields. Keep that in mind. These are our root knot counts again in low risk and high risk. We just were able to divide these fields into two zones, high risk and low risk, based on, as we'll see later, primarily changes in elevation, not so much as changes in soil texture. This was the second field, and then the third field. No significant differences between zones in terms of root knot population. We did see a trend toward higher population densities in the low risk zone, which was observed for the TIMIC treatments. In the low risk zones, both TIMIC and Telon maintain below the thresholds, except for one with the low TIMIC in the low zone in one of the fields. In most cases, the high rate of TIMIC was sufficient to control populations. And in nearly all cases, no rate effect was observed, but there was significantly higher level of control with Telon compared to TIMIC. So let's look at 09 population counts. This is the first field, second field, and third field. Not very clearly shown that there was a benefit from having these risk management zones. No significant differences in root knot populations between these zones. We did see an interesting anomaly with Telon in field one, all treatments failed to adequately control population levels. And in all cases, the high Telon treatment had numerically the lowest root knot populations. So let's look now at yield. This is 07. You see a nice progression from low risk to high risk. You're going from the different soil textures to the highest, excuse me, to the sandiest soil from left to right. And you see yields followed somewhat accordingly. Significant differences between the zones and the treatments. Yields tended to be higher in the low risk zone, as you would think. And certainly the lowest yields were in the high risk zone, where they had the highest root knot populations. But in both the moderate and high risk, no difference between rates, but between types of nematocide. So this is yield now in the sandier fields. We did have statistically higher across all zones, higher yields in the low risk than we did for the high risk here. Second field, we had a significant difference just in the low rate of Telon in high risk versus low risk zone. This is the third field. Again, no significant yield losses when compared to the high rate of Telon, which was our gold standard, I guess. Two of the three fields did have significant differences between zones. The yields tended to be higher in the low-risk zone. We feel like the data is suggesting that the tolerance to increasing nematode populations may decrease as these soils become coarser. And yield limitations due to, I guess you would say, elevation, landscape level, those effects may be greater than yield losses attributable to the root knot population damage in this high-risk zone. And the thought there is if you have a slope, over time your sands are going to erode and settle in those lower elevations, and hence you've got a higher sand concentration there. Looking at this year's data, fresh off the yield monitor, this is lint yield for the first field. We did have numerically higher, if not statistically higher, significantly higher yields for the high-risk zone. Here you see the second field and the third field. Only the low-risk zone in field one had significant yield losses. Again, no significant yield differences between the zones. Telon had significantly higher yield in one field but not another, although it was still able to reduce nematode populations. The findings suggest that other factors affecting yield may have mitigated the effect of the root knot. And I think Bob spoke of this earlier. We don't really know sometimes what's going on. So what have we learned from all this? We think we can do a good job of creating zones. And we think we need to use EC, deep from a Varus rig, elevation and slope. Fairly easy to get this data. Most of these, well, none of these should really change from year to year. So once you have this data, you have it. In the 05 to 07 fields, of which I should have mentioned, I was just showing one. Brenda Ortiz just showed one field out of three for those years. The within zone variability was certainly reduced, 10 to 40%. In terms of root knot counts, when you compared it to the whole field, so our zones reduced the variability. It's what we wanted them to do. The same in 08, 09 fields. We reduced the variability of the nematode counts in these zones when you compare it to the whole field. So zones seem to be doing the right thing. The 05 to 07 fields tended to have a greater soil texture distribution. Now you've seen some of Dr. Overstreet's maps, and he mentioned don't look at the numbers, but I'm going to look at the numbers. I couldn't help it. Had to look at them. We have a range maybe 0 to 20. You were showing 100. 80. His range, our range. So our entire range is in his what he called his lighter soil. We delineated zones using EC, elevation, and slope data. Now in 08 and 09, our fields were very much coarse texture, very sandy, little variability, 0 to 7 range. So we were one little pixel on his range. That was our entire scale. So we have very sandy soils used in these 2 years. So it seems that we've used more of the elevation change in our zone delineation than we did the EC data, even though it was important. The statistics show that the elevation data became a little more important. So our 07 work was very promising. We can show significant difference between zones, but our 08 and 09 results, no significant differences between zones for either yield or root knot population. Root knot population densities varied, sometimes significantly. But with sites with relatively uniform soil texture, which many of our fields are, they may not fully benefit from a management zone approach. The entire field is a management zone. It's a sandy zone. So you would expect the root knot nematode to be more widely distributed across that field because it doesn't see those patches, I guess. It's not a magic bullet. Zone delineation works, but it's just another tool in the toolbox. It doesn't account for any other mitigating factors, and it certainly doesn't replace the need for pulling samples, as Bob hammered home, so I'll echo that. But it can direct the grower to zones that need to be sampled to determine problem levels, give them an idea of where they can spend their money best in these fields. So back to the question, risk management zones. Yeah, I think we can direct sampling. I think it can lead to all those other things that we mentioned earlier. And with that, I'll stop. I would like to thank the Georgia Cotton Commission, Cotton Incorporated, Bayer, Dow, the support teams at both Bio and Ag Engineering and Plant Pathology, our grower cooperators listed here, as well as county agents that supported us very well. We've got some of them in the audience, Keith Rucker, Tiff County, Scott Brown in Coffee County, Ed Harrison, who was shown taking a sample in Bob's presentation over in Mitchell County. Those guys certainly made the project go well. So with that, I'll stop and